Today's daf is daf nun.
Okay, we saw in the Mishnah that there is no way to establish a chazaka, for a husband to establish a chazaka on a wife's property, which made it quite clear that there is a way for a husband to establish a raya. Because, I mean, the chazaka is just there to take the place of a shtar that was no longer available, according to him. But had the shtar existed, it would be good. Now, this was a problem because we found that there's an entire issue of a woman being able to say, Nachat ruach asiti levali. So whatever it is that she would do, certainly if she sold it to her husband directly, she could always come back and say, look, I just didn't want to wreck my peace in the home by getting into a fight over this, so I went through the motions of selling it to him, but no intention of really selling it to him. So that the question that we ended up working it out, where there would be no such taina, where it was nichse melug. Nichse melug is this is entirely hers. He only has a right to the peirot. And therefore, in such a case, obviously she could say, excuse me, it's my field, I'm not pleased to sell it. And there wouldn't be any problem. So this is how we explained the issue in the mission. The problem that we came up with was a Amemar. A Amemar said that a man and a wife, both who sell nichse melug, it's nothing, it's not a good sell, which we took to mean initially, that if you first, which was the case we were talking about, you first bought it from the husband, you go to the wife's, confirm the sale, pay the wife, and that way everything is hunky-dory. Should be fine, according to what we're saying over here, because she certainly is not able to tie it. She sold it to somebody else in order to not have to work for her husband. Even the husband herself, she can't say that. And yet Amemar is claiming that it's precisely what she can do, at least that's what he seems to be saying, that it's useless. Doesn't matter if you sell nichse melug. So one approach we had in Amemar, this is where we ended yesterday, one approach we had in Amemar is to say that he wasn't talking about a case where both the man and the wife sold. He was simply pointing out that in two separate cases, if a man sells nichse melug, doesn't mean anything, because if he kicks the bucket the next day, he can't sell more than he had a right to, and therefore it's meaningless, meaning it's meaningless for the future. So if he dies, the field goes straight back to the woman anyway. What's the difference if he sold out the nichse melug for peirot? Now he's not alive, there are no peirot. And if she sold, it's also exactly the same halacha because of takonat usha. Since in usha we learned a takona that a husband has a right as if he's a lakoach, if he's a purchaser of his wife's field in the event of her death when he takes her as a wife. So it turns out that he had a pre-existing lien to anything that she would sell in the nechse melug, and so if she dies, he's still yorisha because of takonat usha. So over there, enoch dinami, she has every right, when you're right, to sell out her nechse melug, she's the owner. And the nechse melug, because of takonat usha, comes along a Amemar to say, wouldn't matter, because even though she sold it, we don't care. But it was never referring to a case where the man and the woman sold, and there was no issue of nachat ruach asiti levali. Now that, sort of an iffy approach to a Amemar, but at least it works out. I mean, otherwise he's going to have a problem with the Mishnah. I mean, the Mishnah says, beferish, that the only thing that your husband doesn't have would be the question of a chazaka, but he can certainly have a raya, which means she cannot say nachat ruach asiti levali. So, of course, she can't say nachat ruach asiti levali to sell to somebody else. So there's only one possible explanation, at least it would appear. And if a Amemar is going to understand the Mishnah, he's got to be understanding. He's got to be making a statement that's irrelevant to the Mishnah. He's making a statement about a separate sale, and not where she agreed to a husband's sale. So, again, that's what we thought. We thought we'd have to accept that kind of explanation on it, because very often there don't appear to be any other options. You know, certainly on the surface, there's no other options. What's interesting is that today, the Gemara comes up with a fascinating option, in which what Amemar is saying is nothing to do with our sugya, despite the fact that he is actually saying that a woman who agreed to a sale that her husband made, it's not a good sale. But nothing to do with the issue of nachat ruach asiti levali. We overlooked a completely different approach. Fascinating. And that is, today, an alternative approach to Amemar. Says the Gemara, the other approach to Amemar is ibay teima. Amemar was indeed saying that they can't sell together, but for a different reason. He was going out leaving Rebbe Elazar. And it's true that this psak of Rebbe Elazar runs counter to our Mishnah. But, so who cares? But, I mean, that's not the point. It raises a completely different issue, the Rebbe Elazar's psak. Now, before we enter into the world of Rabbi Elazar's Psak, just remember that there's a special halacha about the owner of an Eved. So even though you have no right to abuse an Eved, we know that the Eved will go free if you knock out even a tooth of an Eved. And if you kill an Eved, it's like killing a free man. You'll be killed. It's a death penalty for killing an Eved. There's no difference except for one fascinating thing, and that is the halacha of Yoma Yomai. Yoma Yomai means that if the owner kills an Eved by hurting him in a way that he survives for a while and then dies, then the Torah is not mechayev of him if it's 24 hours. That's what Yom HaYomayim is, Yom Shuka HaYomayim, 24 hours, meaning there may be two separate days involved in that 24-hour period. If the Eved survives 24 hours, then there's no chiyev misa on the other. But in order to be in that din, he has to be the other. Now, what constitutes the other? So here, fascinatingly, we enter into the same issue as our sugya, though it doesn't look that way on the surface. And that's because we can have two separate elements of adnut. Adnut can be the rights to the eved to work. So let's say somebody else would rent you the eved, would give you, but you have only the rights to his work. So you use the eved for 30 days, pay me X. Does that make me an owner? So that if I kill him, but he survived 24 hours, I'm not chayiv? Or is the guy who owns the eved legally, is he the owner? Or perhaps neither are the owner, because there's not one person who owns the whole thing. Now that's very similar to the idea of nechsei meluk. Nechsei meluk, the husband has the right to the perot. The woman has the right to the actual field. Again, who is the owner? So when it comes to a sale, and there we're going to find that actually Rabbi Elazar says, in exactly that case, which is the equivalent of our nechsei meluk, neither of them are the owner. Because in order to effect a change in a field, you have to not only own it legally, but you have to own its production. Otherwise, what kind of ownership is that? To own an abstraction called land that can't produce for you, it's producing for somebody else. On the other hand, the other guy who's eating the payros, he doesn't own anything. What does he own? In a sense, it's an abstraction what he owns. He owns a right in the land to produce his payros. Mamela, neither of them would be able to sell. Because in the same way the Rabbi Elazar says, when it comes to an eved, neither of them are considered to be the owner. Not the owner of the work of the Eved, if he doesn't own the Eved, and not the owner of the Eved if he doesn't have the rights to the work anymore, because he sold it out to somebody else. So therefore, it turns out there's a completely different question. Nothing to do with Nachat Ruach Hasiti Levali, but whether my signature has any meaning. Yes, I mean it 100%. Yeah, I'm telling you right here in court, I want to sell this field, my field, my husband wants to sell his piece of the field, which is the payroll, and nonetheless, our Maimar would say, makes a difference. It's nothing to do with what they're saying. They don't have the ownership to sell. And that was something that never occurred to us, because that would be the issue over here in this amount.
This whole course.
Yeah, no, really. It is amazing. Just unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. It's like a completely new discovery in the like out of left field. Which is,
but in the context of a Daf Yomi, it's a lot easier than with these long sunnis and Baba Kama, where it's an entire, and you're trying to follow everything for an entire day. This falls together very nicely, and because it's this.
Yeah, every day is a new surprise. Right? Okay, so let's just see that inside. Now I've sort of allowed you to peek ahead. Let's take a look at the Gemara inside. Scott's not going to crack a smile tonight at all. He had a very bad Sukkot story, clearly. You know, maybe the scotch was no good. I don't know. Something's knocked him out. Scotch for Scott. Maybe that was the problem. We have a little stash over here, Richie and I, just for emergencies. Oh my goodness.
Speaking of which, tomorrow we need to something that's my father's
Okay, very good. All right, so let's take a look at that inside now. He's going on Libet Rabbi Elazar to Tanya. Now, here is the machloket, and it's actually now a four-way machloket. To Tanya, Amocheret Avdo. Now, here's a guy who owned an Eved, but he sells out the Eved, keeping for himself the right for the next 30 days of work, right? Which is the equivalent, essentially, of selling the payrais of an Eved, right? That's really what it boils down. In other words, I own his work, the other guy owns the body of the Eved. So he has to be Mishamish, the original owner, for 30 days. So Rabbi Meir says, okay, then that means the original owner is the owner in terms of the din of Yom HaYomai. So Harishon, Yeshno B'din Yom HaYomai, Mipnei Shuhu Tachtav. Basically, this Eved is now under his command, right? And that's the way, really, the Torah defined the issue over here. It's the fact that since the Torah says that he dies tachat yado, which means under the hand of the one who can command him. So apparently we're taking into consideration the interrelationship of, look, you know, sometimes things get out of hand, I may punch him too hard or whatever, but we understand that if you didn't kill him in a way that he dies rapidly, I mean, you know, it was a fatal wound, and it's immediately fatal within 24 hours, that we're not going to be Mechayev Yomisa. So who is that? That's the one in which he's able to command him. It's Tachat Yado. And here is the guy that it's Tachtav. This is the man that is considered to be the owner, even though he doesn't technically own him. The other one, even though it is kaspo, and the Torah says ki kaspo, so it is kaspo, but it's not tachtav, because he can't command them, he doesn't owe him any allegiance, it's none of his business what the Eved is doing, somebody else is the one that's going to be giving the commands for the Eved. And that, for intents of yom yomayim, would define the balut. So, that means, kasova kinyan peirot, ki kinyan haguf tami, because it can't simply be from the word tachtav, you see. Because the Torah basically uses two words over here. One, that it's tachtav, but the other one is kikaspohu at the end of the sugya. Now those are contradictory in a sense. Kikaspohu means the reason that you're not chayev is because you own him. But tachtav means the reason that you're not chayev is because he's yours to command. Those are opposites. So as Tosfos says, the only thing that allows us to define which of those is the definitive statement in the pasuk is what do we hold about the actual meaning of Baalut? Is Baalut the kinyan perot? Does that give you an actual ownership? Or is Baalut an abstraction of kesef? If Rabbi Meir says over here that what we should look at is the tachtav specifically, so it has to be the one that it's tachat yado, and therefore he must be saying that it's got to be the kinyan. The Kinyan Perot, in this case the Perot of an Eved is his work, is the equivalent of Kinyan Haguf. So this is Rabbi Meir Shita. Kasova Kinyan Perot ki Kinyan Haguf, tell me. Fine. Now Rabbi Yehuda says, no, on the contrary, it's the second guy, meaning the new owner, even though he can't command the Eved yet for the next 30 days, but he owns him technically. So the Sheini is Yeshno B'din Yoma Yomayim B'nei Shu Kaspo. But the Rishon is not B'din Yoma Yomayim because it's Eno Kaspo. And at the end of the day, it's the Torah says, Achim yomo yomayim yamod lo yakum ki kaspo, lo yukam ki kaspo. So here, if it's not kaspo, now obviously he holds it's not kaspo because kasava kinyan perot lav ki kinyan aguf. He's saying that is not kaspo because you don't own anything in the gufa eved, you only own the rights to the products. Again, in terms of the same aluga, obviously it would be the same issue. Who's the owner that can sell? Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Shinehem yeshnan bedina yomayim. Actually, either of these two people, the original owner or the new owner, that kill the Eved, but kill him in a way in which he survives 24 hours, neither of them would be Chayev. If the first one kills, he's not Chayev, or if the second one kills, he's not Chayev. And we look at it both. I mean, in one sense, it's not Tachtav. In the other sense, it's not Kaspo. So how can I say both of those things? Because Misakale. Actually, I don't know whether kinyan perot ki kinyan guf or lav ki kinyan guf. I mean, since I don't know, I'll have to be mekel because suffik nefashot lakel. I can't kill somebody because maybe he's not the one that's in yom yomayim. I could only give him a chiyav mita if I know that there's definitely not no din of yom yomayim. But if I'm not sure the din of yom yomayim applies to him or not, how am I supposed to? The court can't possibly paskin that he's chayav mitzad suffik. So therefore, now, there's interesting, I mean, the approach of the Rashbam is because it says v'yitzilu ha'eda. Tosfos says that's ridiculous. What do you mean v'yitzilu ha'eda? But when you, v'yitzilu ha'eda is a special halacha, that when it comes to dinim of nefashot, the Beit Din is supposed to go out of its way to find tzadim, to figure out a way to save the guy's life. Any twist that they can use in the legal, some type of legal argument, in which this guy would not be chayev, that's why over here they would be not mechayev. Tosfos says, well, why does this have anything to do with Yitzilu Ha'eda? The Gemara is saying that it's a straight-out suffik. If it really is a straight-out suffik, I mean, you don't take a penny from a person mitzad suffik, right? For a moment, you're not going to be motzi moment mitzad suffik. We're going to take his life mitzad suffik. I need a pasuk to tell me that. It's crazy. And so obviously, the Rashbam is learning that the suffik is only in terms of Yitzilu Ha'eda. So in other words, if I need to figure out a way to save this guy's life, I can open up the possibility that maybe in this sugya the Torah actually sees it as the tachtav being definitive or the kikaspoa being definitive. See, either way, I would be mechuyev to take that into consideration. I can't paskin this completely. So this is so far not nogea us. Here's where it gets interesting. Rabbi Elazar on there, neither of them are b'din yom yomayim. How is that possible? I mean, neither of them are b'din yom. Somebody's the owner. Clearly, he holds nobody's the owner in the complete legal sense. Zelafisheino tachtav, v'zelafisheino kaspo. You have to be able, and that's the point. The Torah is saying there's two elements in ownership. First of all, you own it legally, the goof. Secondly, the ownership gives you rights of usage. So in this case, not either of them fulfills both of those requirements. So it's both criteria that define the nature of ownership. Yomar Rava, my time at Rabbi Elazar, Omar Kra, lo you kam ki kaspohu. Obviously, an eved is kaspohu. Why you say, or at least you could say kesevu if you don't know that it's obvious, but it certainly doesn't have to say it's kaspohu. So that means it's kaspo hamiyuchad lo. The Torah itself is telling us how to read this pasuk. It's saying, when I'm telling you kaspo, and I'm telling you this business about tachtav, I mean that it's got to be entirely kaspo that is tachtav, because otherwise I could have just said alternatives, kesevu, or tachtavu. If I'm saying it's got to be completely kaspo, then that's a new definition of the required ba'alut for this din. Which means that if a Maimar holds like that, he's making a brilliant statement. A husband and a wife who together sell a field of Dixi Malug, nothing happens. Because neither of them own it. So how can they sell it? But it has nothing to do with the whole question that we raised until now about the woman saying, well, I didn't really mean it. Meaning it has nothing to do with it. You can mean it with all your heart, but you don't have the legal powers to be able to sell. Simple as that. And therefore, a Maimar may just be something out of left field that doesn't relate to the sugya that Rav was talking about, the Mishnah was talking about. That's all a completely different thing. So now getting back to the Mishnah and the main topic over here. So we said the next, V'lo le'ish chazaka b'nichse ishto, a man does not have a chazaka b'nichse ishto, which initially we said, well, of course not. I mean, he's got the rights of usage. What, are you crazy? How could he possibly claim that he owns the field? V'horaya, I've been eating the peras, and therefore I didn't watch my contract. What are you? Of course you were eating the peras, you fool. Yeah, every husband has a right to eat the peras of an Nitzrayim Alug. Why in the world would we believe that you bought it because you ate, claiming you ate the peras? So what did we say it has to be talking about? It has to be talking about a case where the guy had signed off his rights to Nechosim before they actually consummated the marriage. So he said, Dinu Dvarim, mainly Ben Echsayach, Yadai Besulakot, one of those Rishonots. In which case he opted out of the Takana Dravon in his benefit. And remember we said you could opt out in advance from a Takana Dravon if the whole point of the Takana is for you. So he opted out. Then he went in and got married after opting out, so he ended up never getting a Nisim. Nonetheless, the mission was coming to say a Kiddush, great Kiddush, despite the fact that you opted out. If you end up, Lamaisa, having a relationship with this woman in a way that you're eating the peras, it's all understood to be a function in the same look. So whatever. So she, you know, in the end, you ate it that way. Fine. So, which of course is probably what it would end up in 99% of the cases anyway. So, I mean, why would you be able to tell her that you bought it? All right. Now, everything seemed fine, except that now Rav really messes things up with another psak of his. Rav said, ask the Gemara, how do you understand, in the context of that Mishnah, Rav's psak that Eshet Ish Tzricha Limchot, that a married woman would have to do an act of micha'a. Now, let's figure out what that means. I mean, when you say she would have to do, that means, I mean, if she didn't do, you would have a chazaka, right? Since she has to be mocha, if she isn't mocha, then her chazaka against her is a valid chazaka. If she wouldn't have to be mocha, then it wouldn't be a good chazaka. Well, of course I wasn't mocha. I don't have to be mocha because I'm a married woman. So let's figure out what we're talking about. B'man, when you say she doesn't, she has to be mocha against whom? Are we talking about a third party that is claiming to have bought the field, that is eating the peirot? So she should have been mocha against another person, not her husband. I mean, the problem with that is that Rav himself, who was the one that says that an anxious ish has to be mocha, says beferish that no third party ever gets a chazak in the chazak of an anxious ish. By definition. Why? Because she'll never be mocha because she's letting her husband conduct her business. She said, what do you mean? I mean, listen, you know, basically, my husband was the one who was going to be dealing with this. Even if he had opted out and Lamaitza wasn't eating, he'd have to deal with it. Because if I die, he inherits me. So I certainly rely on him having enough brains to take care of the... He takes care of the electricity bill. Why the heck wouldn't he take care of the fact that somebody's taking away a field that he's in line to inherit? I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't worry my little head about these things. You know, I only take care of the important things. So Mimela, Rav is now contradicting himself, right? Because on the one hand, Rav is saying that an Eishes Ish can never need to be mocha because it's not required of her to be mocha, if he cannot establish Chasaka. On the other hand, he says that an Eishes does have to be mocha. The only answer must be is that Elalav Bebal. She doesn't have to be mocha against a third party, but she would have to be mocha if her husband goes into the field and takes it. So in other words, that's contradiction to the Mishnah. We said that in a case where the husband didn't really have rights to the field because he opted out of the Takan and Rabbanan, she still doesn't have to be mocha. And that's the point of saying in the Mishnah, what's finished? The Baal doesn't get a chazaka in Nechse Ishta. And here Rav says, oh, no, wait a minute. If he didn't have rights to eat it, then she did have to be mocha. So how could Rav get away with saying something that is clearly the opposite of the Mishnah? Oh, my Rava, that's not really a problem. Because I agree with you, it has to be referring to the husband. It can't be referring to a third party. But we're not talking about the normal chazaka, where a guy ate the Paris. We're talking about a guy goes into his wife's beautiful field with a bulldozer, starts digging it up and searching for gold. And he's convinced he's got treasure in it. Whatever, that guy's out of his mind. So he's going around, obviously he's talking about a field that is not aimed to be turned into a parking lot or a water storage area. I mean, if it wasn't, that's normal usage. But he went ahead and he was chafar baborot shechinu me'arot. So he's wrecking it. If he's wrecking it, so then I mean, that had nothing to do with rights, and that had nothing to do with her level of tolerance where he didn't even opted out of the rights. Nobody's got tolerance for that. So there, Anesha's ish, if it's her husband, would have to be mocha. And if she's not, and the husband says, look, I bought it for her, she didn't say anything for the past 3 years. So that would be a good chazaka. Says Gemara, wait, but I thought Reb Nachman quoted Rabbi Bar Avuha as saying that you cannot have a chazaka for nezikin at all, which we take to mean that if you damage something, then the person is understood not to have been mocha because he says, look, I'm going to sue the guy in my own time. You certainly can't claim that he's an owner. That never even occurred to me that the idiot would claim he's an owner. What owner would do something destructive to the long-term viability of what he supposedly owned? So what happened is the guy walked in, wrecks my field. I need to say, ladies and gentlemen, I'm the real owner. Well, obviously, this guy's not the owner. I have my contract still. Of course I'm the owner. So what? You say, well, why didn't you go to court? I'll go to court when I get the lawyer I want. That's not your business, but certainly it doesn't establish ownership. If that's what was meant over here, this psak of Rabba Baravu, so then this doesn't make sense because now we can no longer say the teretz of Rava that he did something that was damaging to the field because then there's another reason why she wouldn't have to be married. Not because she's an HCC, not because it's a husband, but because she's still going to sue him for damages. And there's nothing that shows Baalut about doing damage. That's what he seems to be saying. So then we don't have the option of answering Rav's contradiction to the Mishnah the way Rava was answering it. I don't know, Rich, you walked in here looking pretty good.
I looked pretty active. I slept all night, all day. I didn't do anything but sleep, sleep and eat.
So that shows that I put you to sleep under anesthesia. Sheesh. All right.
I just closed my eyes from this.
No dancing?
A little dancing, for sure. No, we have no dancing. That was till like 1 o'clock.
Okay, so says the Gemara, we can redefine what Rabba Bar Avuha said. What Rabba Bar Avuha said is that ein chazakal nezikin, meaning that the ein din chazakal nezikin is what he meant, meaning that you do not have the standard parameters that define chazaka when it comes to nezikin. But what that means is that you get an immediate chazaka, not that you have to wait 3 years. Because like this, we say people have a level of tolerance. So Mamela, okay, the guy came in, I figure he'll leave next year. But if he's doing damage, I want him out of there today. Therefore, if I don't say anything, and this guy claims when I say to him, finally, you know, maybe it's only 2 days later, I say to him, what are you doing here? He says, what do you mean? I bought it. I have a contract. Where's the contract? Well, after I saw that you didn't say a word when I was tearing the place apart, it never occurred to me I still got to keep my papers. Obviously, you had acquiesced entirely. So over there, you don't need 3 years for the chazaka, is what it means. Not that you don't get a chazaka, you're going to be a better chazaka, faster chazaka. Or, you know what? This may have absolutely nothing to do with chazaka. Maybe it has nothing to do with chazaka in the field. Because the truth is, we've already seen this mimer of Rabbi Barvu, and we know exactly what it's referring to, and it is not referring to a case of getting a chazaka on a field that you caused damage to. It's talking about getting a chazaka on damage. Meaning that you do something in your own rishus that damages another party, a neighbor. You start a business or whatever it is, it's driving the neighbor crazy. And 4 years later he comes and he says, I want him out, I can't take it. He's got to close down that business. He's got to close down his oil refinery that he bought, that he started up in his backyard. Whatever it is that he's doing, the barn. So whatever he's doing, I want him out. The guy says, what do you mean? I mean, for 3 years he never said a word. Now all of a sudden he's saying something. Obviously it was my fault. So there we say, there's no such thing as having a chazak on causing damage. Now, it's not strictly true to say there's no such thing, because remember, Lav Itmar Allah, Rav Mariam, Rav Kutra, Rav Zvidam, Rav Beit Akise, we're talking about things which people may think that they can tolerate and ends up simply driving them crazy. So it's something that produces smoke, so the guy's got a kiln, you know? His wife's into pottery. So he builds this kiln, and the neighbor doesn't say anything for a while, but it starts getting so smoky out there that he finally just caves in and says, get it out of here. Or an open outhouse, not the modern kind of the Ritchie variety, but the old-fashioned kind, very old-fashioned kind, but it's not even, there's not even a hole in the ground. This is an above-ground bathroom. This is bad news. So over there, that kind of outhouse. Yeah, I don't want it. Okay, but obviously if you're talking about what type of things, you're talking about what type of damage you're causing a neighbor. You're not talking about what you're doing to a field, to establish chazaka in the field. This is a completely different sugya. We ended up asking a kasha from Rav Nachman, who was bechlal talking about something else completely, nothing to do with being machzik in the field. And indeed, when it comes to being machzik in the field, we can go back to saying what the way Rav understood it. They were just talking about a baal, and the baal was being chayfer, and maybe it is a normal chazaka, 3 years, so we're talking after 3 years, whenever. That's the simple explanation. Rav Yosef says, I say, the meaning of an eshet ish, that Rav is talking about over here, and where he said over there that she's got to be moch, and if not, then the other guy's going to have a chazaka. And you're saying, this doesn't make any sense, if it's talking about somebody else, because nobody can be machzik b'nechseyeshes ish. That was your question. It was because of that that you were forced to conclude the only thing it could mean is that she has to be moich on the husband. I say, it's not referring to the husband, and therefore it's irrelevant to the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about the husband. It's not referring to the husband. It's referring to an eshes ish who has to be moich against the third party. I, Rav, said an eshes ish doesn't have to be moich against the third party. I shall tell you what the case is. Indeed, it is talking about an acher. It's talking about a third party. Over here, the case is that the guy was in the field during the lifetime of her husband. For however many years, it's irrelevant. Now her husband dies. And now he remains in the field for 3 years. Now, in a normal case, let's say somebody was once in the field because he had the right to the payroll. He's an Arius, it was sold to him, whatever. So then he continues living, taking the stuff from that field for 20 years. If we know that at one time, initially, he was in the field because he had a right to be there for Perot, he's never going to be able to tie in a chazaka. We say, what do you mean? We know, at what point did it change? You know, so well, it is 4 years ago it changed. Okay, so where's the contract? Well, I didn't keep the contract. Why not? Because I was eating. Of course you were eating. You were eating for 20 years before that also. So why in the world didn't you keep the contract? So there, normally we say you can't get a chazaka under those circumstances. The chiddush over here is that if the guy remains in the field after the death of the husband, so despite he's claiming how he bought it from the husband. Had the husband himself tried to get that chazaka, would be meaningless. Obviously he can't tie that he's got a chazaka more than the husband himself. But over here, since even the shitasa, let's say, he bought the rights from the husband, he's claiming, who bought the whole field from you, right? I know he bought the field from you. So that's a good taina. Of course, in this case, it's not a good taina because no one would have been moved. Okay. But here, he stayed there. He now stayed, now it is important, the number of years. 3 years after the death of the husband. She's no longer an Eishes Ish. She was relying on a dead husband to be Meicher. So now we ask her, what's this guy doing in your field? He claims that he bought it from your husband, who bought it from you. Ah, oh, nonsense, she says. Maybe he bought the rights to Paris from my husband, but I certainly never sold the field to my husband. Well, that's interesting, we tell her, because why in the world, after your husband's death, and we certainly know he can't sell the Paris for after his death, he can only sell what he owns, why didn't you say anything? That's what we're talking about. So there she can't say, well, he was there for so many years, you know, he was Mavatra on the Paris for those years, you know. Because afterwards, after my husband died, I didn't realize he was going to claim he was an owner of the field. He was eating there before. So the chiddush over here is that Rav says, no, nonetheless, the moment that the husband dies and he's still in that field, at that point, the clock starts ticking. She has to be meicher. She cannot rely on a taina that she figured, I don't really have to be meicher because everybody knows that he was there before while my husband was alive, and therefore everybody's going to understand that he was only there for peirot. That's what I thought. No, says Rav, that's not thinking. If a guy is sitting there eating your field without any reshus, because even if your husband did sell the field for its peirot, it would have now reverted to you. We do not accept your taina that you just didn't want to pursue it. Undoubtedly, this guy is telling the truth, and it really is his. Because look, suppose he had said, I bought it from you after your husband died. No? That's a pretty good taina. So since he has that taina, so he has the migo of that taina. And therefore, if you want to avoid that, you have to do something about it. So therefore, since, says the Gemara, so we're talking about going sha'achla, miktzat chazaka b'chayei abal. Now when it says miktzat chazaka, that's really not the point. Usually we're sort of bringing in that language from the previous sugya of achal, miktzat b'fnei av, miktzat b'fnei ben. Here, that's not the point because he has no chazak at all from b'chayei abal. That we understand. We just borrow that language. But what is important is that he ate it shalosh li'achar mitat abal. That's what's important. So after the husband died, now the clock starts ticking on 3 years of chazak. So therefore, migo de'i boy omar, should say la. Since he could say to her that ana zavita minach, I bought it from you directly after your husband died. And then she wouldn't have had a leg to stand on. So ki omar la nami atzavinta le. If he says to her, you sold it to your husband, who then turned around and sold it to me in his lifetime, v'zavdan li'alai, he is also ne'ama. And that explains now what it was that the case that Rav was saying, that she needs to be mochem meant, and therefore there never was a stira. We thought that it was a contradiction, which forced us to say that it must mean she has to be mochem nabal. And now you started looking around, what would be the case? How you say, well, I thought she can't have a chazak of the baal. So we had to come onto this bulldozer in the field thing. It's all very, very simple. It means exactly what it says. She has to be mocha in a third party, even though an Eishes Ish doesn't have to be mocha. But in this case, she's not an Eishes Ish. So what's the Chiddush? Chiddush is he started eating it while she was an Eishes Ish. And therefore, you might have thought it goes on like it does in Arisut or other rites. Gamash Malan, that if the rites clearly ended with the death of the husband, we don't say that. So again, it's a totally different issue that makes perfectly good sense. Where it stands has nothing to do with Arsuk. And let's take a look now for a moment, deeply, more deeply, into Rav's Meimer. Goof. Omar Rav ein machzikim b'nechsei eshet ish. Okay, so we saw that Rav holds a woman relies on her husband to take care of these issues. V'dayanei gola amru. However, the dayanim in the gola, which is a reference to Karna, in the Gemara for some reason, the Rashbam brings Shmuel for Karna.
Karna?
Yeah, Karna was a famous dayan. The Gemara doesn't talk about Karna. I mean, unless you had a different gears, something, you know, in the Gemara.
Right?
What's that? Sorry, it doesn't talk about Shmuel. It talks about Karna. But, wait a second, I see I have it. Yeah, the Rashash just points out here. Lefanenu sham ita Karna, lechud. Okay. So, but in any event, whoever these Dayanei Gola are, either Karna or according to Rashbam Shmuel, the Karna. They disagree, and they say you can, in fact, be machzik in the chosmim and eshet ish, and therefore she should be mocha, because otherwise you'll get a chazaka. Now, strangely, Omar Rav halacha k'dayanei gola. That's crazy. He just said a minute ago, that you don't really get a chazak and exercise. How could he possibly pass like the Dayanei Golah? Omrula Rav Kana Rav Asi L'Rav, have you changed your mind? Hadar Be'mar Mishmaitate? Amalu, no. I'm talking about a case like Rav Yosef's case. Obviously, Rav didn't say a case like Rav Yosef's case, being as Rav Yosef didn't appear on this planet until generations after Rav. But in other words, Rav said, I'm talking about in a case where a chazaka started as an Eish Hadish. There I made it to the Dayanei Golah. I'm not saying they're mad. There is a case like that, which is, of course, the case that we're referring to now as Rav Yosef's case, because he was the one that spoke about it in detail. But Lamaisa, I certainly disagree with them in any other circumstances. If the chazaka didn't continue on 3 years afterwards, then it shouldn't have to be mocha. The only chiddush is, I would agree, in a place where, like Rav Yosef would say, generations later, where a chazaka began as an ancient tradition that kept 3 years afterwards, you know, okay, fine. In that case, Einach Hinami. There she has to be mocha, which is exactly what Rav Yosef explained, Rav's own mind. So in other words, what we have over here is a story in which Rav backed up the whole contention of Rav Yosef, that was the meaning, and it was Rav was talking about being mocha, not in the Baal, but actually in the third party. And there's a case where even Rav agrees, it turns out, how do you like that? The archaeological evidence shows that Rav indeed took into consideration Rav Yosef's case and was all in favor of that explanation. Okay, let's do our review.
Normal time.
I guess, unless you're keeping a second day, I don't know. Maybe you had such a miserable time in the Rovat. Oh, they don't work on Yisrochag, is that it? Yeah, we thought you had a great time last night. What happened? Iboy tema. Amema diyamar karabi alazar. Detanya mocheret avdo. Pasaki moshi shamshenu shloshim yom. Rabbi Meir omer harishon yesh. Nobedin yomo yomayim. Bipnei shu tachtav. Vasheni enobedin yomo yomayim. Bipnei sheno tachtav. So kasovar kinyan perot ki kinyan aguftami. Rabbi Yudah omer. Hasheni yeshlo b'din yomo yomayim b'pnei shu kaspo, and that's loshen l'posek. Harishon in obedin yomo yomayim sheno kaspo. Kasava kinyan pirot lav ki kinyan aguf tami. Rabbi Yosi omer, shnei hem yeshlam b'din yomo yomayim. Ze m'pnei shu tachtam v'ze m'pnei shu kaspo. Umisafkele, apparently, kinyan pirot ki kinyan aguf tami, lav ki kinyan pirot kinyan aguf tami. And therefore, we have to say Safek Nefashot Lakia. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Shnehem Einam B'din Yomo Yomayim, Zelafi Sheino Tachtav, Zelafi Sheino Kaspo. V'Omar Rava, my Taima, the Rabbi Elazar. Oh yeah, I forgot to say that when we learned the Daf. Omakra, Lo Yukab Ki Kaspohu, Kaspo HaMiyuchad Lo. It has to be Kaspo, meaning the Kesev that is entirely Kaspo. It's all his. There's no need to state Kaspo. Obviously, if it's an evidence, it's Kaspo, right? So if you're stressing the Kaspo, you mean Kaspo across the board. Now, who is that supposed to refer to, do you think, huh? It's got to mean the Baal. Amarav liyolam, it is the Baal. V'kagon shechafar v'aparot shechinu me'arot. Ay ve'amarav nachman, amarav v'aravu, ein chazaka l'nezakin, ema ein din chazaka l'nezakin. If you buy it, ema. We're talking about something entirely different, for heaven's sakes. Lav itmar lav v'mori amar v'kutra, revzid amar v'beit akise, which clearly implies we're talking about herding someone out of your own property into their rishus. With an odor, with smoke, Rabbi Yosef Omar, Liolam Beacher, Uchagon Shachla Mikzat Chazaka Bechaya Baal, and then a full Shalashonim Leacher Bitata Baal. And there he adds a Chazaka because Migodi Boy Omar La, Ana Zavita Minach. So therefore, in this case, where he claims At Zavita Le to your husband, and I was Avna Neale from there, he's Mammon also. And that's where she would have had to be Mocha. Gufa. Amarav ein machzikim b'nechse eishat ish v'dayanei gola amru machzikim. Amarav alocha k'dayanei gola. Amalei Rav Kana Rav Asi L'Rav. What? Hadabei mar mishpaitate? Amalei, no, I'm saying there are cases. Mistavra amru. Get Rav Yosef, if a case like that would come up, we'd have to take into consideration Dayanei Gola. I just want